I'm going to call this meeting to order. This is a September 24th, 2020, City of Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals. This is a quasi judicial proceeding. All those wishing to give testimony during these proceedings will please sign in. I think since we have everything electronically, if you're wishing to speak, you're on electronically. So all proceedings of the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals are recorded. The decisions of the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals are final. Challenges to the decisions of the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals must be filed through the Superior Court of Chatham County. At this time, I'm going to ask those in attendance to stand and face the flag and then bow your heads in invocation and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. Dear Father, we thank you for this time we can gather as a city to do the work of the city. Father, we pray for this city. We pray for comfort. We pray for peace. And Father, we pray that this city would navigate the difficulties of this world, which we are experiencing right now. God, we pray for guidance and direction as we make decisions. And we thank you for your love. In the name of your son, Jesus, we pray. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. You can be seated. I'm going to ask staff now if there are any notices, proclamations, or acknowledgments. And I will say, for the benefit of the recording and the fact that everybody is online, we have Jordan Holloway, staff member that will be presenting a lot of cases today, along with Marcus Lotson. Sitting in the room, we have Michael Brown, Tommy Branch, Mr. Condon, and Trapper Griffin. And I believe Mr. Hunter Hall is online. Is that correct, Hunter?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Any notices, proclamations, or acknowledgments, Mr. Holloway or Mr. Lotson?
No, sir.
Okay. Now we have, we're going to go through the items on the agenda and the items requested to be removed from the agenda. 760 Old River Road variance request. That item is requested to be removed. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. The petitioner has requested that item be removed.
Okay. And approval of the, let's see here, let's go down here. Nothing on the consent agenda. We've got items on the regular agenda. I'm going to read through them. 616 East 54th Street, variance request. 401 Washington Avenue, variance request. 1606 Brownville Court, variance request. 111 East Jones Street, appeal of a decision. Orchard Street, 503 Orchard Street, variance request. 919 East 39th Street, variance request. 232 Price Street, variance request. Are there any other items did I miss anything?
No, Mr.
Is anyone online that is here for an item that I did not read off? Or raise your hand electronically or whatever. All right. There's no items on the consent agenda. We've got one item being removed from the agenda. Can I get a vote to approve the final agenda? And then we'll go back and do the minutes. All right, Mr. Brown moved to approve the final agenda as read. Seconded by Mr. Condon. All in favor? I got to do a roll call. Mr. Hall, how do you vote?
Yes.
Okay, I say yes. Mr. Brown? Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Griffin?
Yes.
And I am a yes. All right. The agenda passes unanimously. Approval of the minutes of August 27, 2020. Can I seek a motion?
I move that we approve the minutes.
All right, Mr. Condon moves that we approve the minutes. Can I get a second? Seconded by Mr. Brown. Mr. Hall, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Brown? Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Griffin?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Okay, that's unanimous. The minutes are approved. Now we're on to the regular agenda. 616 East 54th Street, variance request. Mr. Holloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to give you a brief orientation, petitioner is requesting approval of a 3-foot rear yard setback variance from the 3-foot requirement to construct an addition to an existing garage. The subject property is located at 616 East 54th Street within the RSF 6 single family residential zoning district on a 0.21 acre conforming lot with a single family residence and accessory structure. If you look at this map, the property is highlighted in blue, bounded by 54th Street. You have Paulson Street to the west and then Harmon Street to the east, 53rd Street to the north. Okay. I'll also pull up the site plan here for you as well. So here you can see the existing structure, the residence, and the existing garage structure is in the back left corner here. The addition is off to the east of that. And we'll zoom down here. Here are profiles of what they want the design to look like. And a little bit more in depth as far as blueprints go. And anytime you want to come back to this, let me know. I'd be happy to show you. To go into more detail about this addition, it would be at 100 square foot addition on the east side of the existing garage. And the addition would be keeping the same rear setback as the existing garage, as you can see here on this plan. And the project would remove a brick wall that encroaches the setback further than what the currently existing garage does. The subject property currently has 24% lot coverage, and the proposed addition would increase that lot coverage to just 25%, which is below the maximum of the 40% allowed. Letters of support have been submitted on behalf of the property owners from all adjacent surrounding properties. As far as Article 3, Section 3.21.9A, the Zoning Board of Appeals may authorize a variance in an individual case upon finding of the following features. For general consistency with the ordinance establishes the minimum setbacks in order to protect properties and rights of way from potentially adverse effects of surrounding land uses and residences. The variances that are requested have the potential to affect the surrounding properties in an adverse or detrimental way relating to public health, safety, or welfare just because of the encroachment of setbacks. As far as special conditions go, there are no special conditions and or circumstances that exist which are peculiar to the land, buildings, or structures involved. As far as literal interpretation of the ordinance goes, the provisions and the regulations would not deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed by other properties in the same zoning district. And this minimum, the variance requested is also, if granted, not the minimum variance necessary to make possible the reasonable use of the land, buildings, or structures, as the requested variance is purely a burden upon the homeowner for choosing the building addition location. We understand that they want to keep the same rear line. However, there is room in front that they'd be able to abide by the setbacks of the ordinance that we have in place. Staff recommends denial of the requested encroachment of 3 feet into the rear yard setback for the following reasons. Building on the property line is a potential issue regarding safety and access on the rear lane that multiple properties access. The variance requested would be an expansion of a non-conforming structure location. The variance requested is not the minimum variance required for such construction, as the petitioner could construct the addition while conforming to the current zoning ordinance. And also, adequate justification from the ordinance is not present for staff to recommend approval at this time. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Mr. Holloway
from the board?
Could you bring up the staff report on the screen?
Sure.
And specifically, could you go down to the findings? Is the petitioner present?
Yes, I am.
And could you bring that up again? Can you state your name?
My name is Jack Simmons.
Mr. Simmons, do you swear or affirm the testimony you'll give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
All right. You may proceed. That's good.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how to respond because I'm not sure what would count as convincing testimony here, other than the suggestion that although it's possible for us to construct the room the way it's been described, that is not directly up against the alleyway, the way the garage is, it would really look kind of absurd if we did so, and it wouldn't conform to the building. It would look strange. Also, The houses on both sides of me have garages and residential extensions that would be similar to the one that I would be proposing. So it wouldn't, it doesn't do anything different. It doesn't change the conditions on that alleyway at all. In fact, as I think the as I think the panelist mentioned, it would actually provide more access to vehicles because we'd be removing a wall that is closer to the alley than the addition would be. So there would actually be less encroachment on the alley if we did this, and it would aesthetically fall in line with the neighborhood far better than the counter that's being proposed, which would be to kind of set it forward. Also, moving the addition forward towards the main house, in addition to looking really ridiculous, would also run the risk of being too close to the main house, because there's a setback that it's got to be from the main house, and we didn't want to violate that rule.
Thank you, Mr. Simmons. Any questions for the petitioner? Mr. Condon?
Yes, please. Mr. Simmons, there's currently a brick wall that runs down the lane. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So you're just building inside, you're modifying the brick wall, and you're building inside the yard attached to the existing building, correct? So
that's right. And we would actually remove the brick wall because, you know, you don't want a brick wall a foot and a half away from a structure. That would look ridiculous. So there will be greater. So, for example, the dump trucks and that sort of thing that move through the lane, they'll actually have more access, not less, as a consequence of this. But yeah, that brick wall would be removed.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the petitioner? Mr. Brown? Oh, I'm sorry. Any other questions for the petitioner? All right, hearing none. Mr. Brown, you have a question for staff?
Yes, I'm looking at the first reason for denial. Maybe you can explain it. Is it building on the property line is a potential issue regarding safety and access? What's the determination for potential issue for regarding safety?
As far as safety and access, for any utilities or garbage pickup in that rear lane, making sure they have enough room to appropriately navigate. And we did just hear from the petitioner about the removal of that wall. But while we don't look at this as, oh, you have a wall, but another property doesn't, we have to look at it by the ordinance based on setbacks. So because it is right on that property line, it doesn't give as much leeway to those activities in the alley because it's being built on that property line instead of 5 feet setback from it.
Did they still have access? It's just impeded.
Correct.
So it's still available. The access is still available.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Any other questions for staff? Well, I mean, my understanding from staff is that, you know, basically this is in line with other development in the area, but, you know, the ordinance is very specific. And so staff's recommendation is based on that. I mean, but I'm kind of reading through the tea leaves here as well. Anyone else here to speak for or against this petition? Do you have any hands? If you wish to speak on this petition, please raise your hand electronically. All right, hearing none, I will declare this public hearing closed, and I'll entertain a motion. And staff recommendation is for denial. And so,
yes. I make a motion that we approve the variance request for 616 East 54th Street.
All right, Mr. Condon has made a motion for approval. Can I get a second? Seconded by Mr. Brown.
Seconded.
All right, Mr. Hall, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Brown? Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Griffin?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. That petition passes unanimously. Thank you very much. 401 Washington Avenue, variance request.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, the nature of this variance request, the petitioner is requesting approval to encroach the rear yard setback by 5 feet. The petitioners wish to replace the current brick wall with the rear wall of a new accessory structure. The subject property is located at 401 Washington Avenue within the RSF6 zoning district on a 0.20-acre conforming lot with a single-family residence as well as an existing accessory structure. The property here is highlighted in blue. It is bounded by Reynolds Street to the west and Washington Avenue to the north, as well as a lane that goes south of the property as well. The petitioner would like to add a 352-square-foot accessory structure on the southeast corner of the lot. As you can see here on this plan, in the upper left corner, this is the existing residence that's right here. There's also the existing two-story accessory structure. And then the proposed accessory building would be off to the east here at 352 square feet. The structure's rear wall, as previously stated, would replace an existing brick wall that's on the property line and has no setback from the property line. The subject property is currently 28% lot coverage, and this addition would increase the lot coverage to 32% overall, which is below the maximum 40% allotment in the zoning district. It's important to note that letters of opposition have been submitted on behalf of property owners from nearby properties. We did receive one this morning that is not attached to this agenda, but it is in the folder as part of the official file. As far as general consistency with the ordinance establishes the minimum setbacks in order to protect the properties and rights of way from potentially adverse effects of surrounding land uses and residences. The variances that are requested have the potential effect to have the potential to affect the surrounding properties in adverse or detrimental way relating to public's health, safety, or welfare. It's important to note there are no special conditions or circumstances that exist that are peculiar to the land, buildings, or structures involved in this variance request. As far as the literal interpretation of the ordinance goes, the literal interpretation of the provisions of the regulations would not deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed by other properties in the same zoning district, as this request is purely a burden of the applicant choosing the structure's location. Staff recommends denial of the requested encroachment of 5 feet into the rear yard setback for the following reasons. Building on the property line is a potential issue regarding safety and access on the rear lane that multiple properties use for access. The variance requested would be an expansion of a non-conforming structure location. The variance requested is not the minimum variance required for such construction, as the petitioner could construct the structure while conforming with the current zoning ordinance, and also adequate justification from the ordinance is not present for staff to recommend approval at this time. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Holloway. Any questions for staff? Please raise your hand if you. Mr. Conner?
As I look at the plan here, this is basically a single car garage with some storage?
Correct.
And it will sit where an existing brick wall sits?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Brown?
I just wanted to make sure that the use for this building is for parking, and is there any plumbing in this building?
I cannot answer that question at this time.
We can reserve that one for the petitioner.
Yeah, certainly.
Any other questions for staff? Hearing none, is the petitioner present? Please state your name.
Hello, it's Mike and Cindy Crane.
Mike and Cindy Crane are on. Okay, thank you. Did you happen to, Mr. and Mrs. Crane, did you hear Mr. Brown's question?
Yes, we did. There will be electrical only there, no plumbing or sewage lines going to the structure.
Did that answer your question? Yeah. Mr. and Mrs. Crane, you're welcome to make a statement, or you can just answer any questions. How would you like to proceed?
I'll make a quick statement. We are trying to build a structure out there for the purpose of a garage, bicycle storage, lawnmower equipment, that sort of thing, which we currently have no space for currently on the property. The building will match the existing line of the other buildings that are currently in the alley. So there won't be any garbage truck issues in that regard. In fact, it'll actually be inside of all the telephone poles that are in the alley. So unless you're going to move all the poles, we're inside of all of that.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for the petitioners? Okay, is anyone else here wishing to speak for or against this petitioner? Please raise your hand electronically, and then you'll be recognized. We have anyone? Okay. There was some opposition to this.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions for staff or the petitioners?
We'd like to respond to the opposition if the opposition has any opinions or questions that they are opposed to.
We were not aware that there was opposition.
So.
Well.
I've uploaded here the letters of opposition. Can you all see that clearly on your screen?
Yes.
And let me know when you're ready. I can proceed to the.
We can only read half of it because of the chat line here.
Is that better?
There we go. Yeah. Okay. Along with reasons. The vegetation they note in this is a non-native species. It's bamboo, and we would not be removing all vegetation, only the portion needed for removing the wall and doing the construction.
Well, good luck with that bamboo.
I've heard it's a struggle.
Okay, I'm going to scroll here to the second letter as well. That was just kind of an expansion upon the first letter.
Okay.
Does that work as far as your spacing?
It's located directly across the alley from this proposed garage. Only garage in this alley was constructed in 1925. Okay.
Currently, as it stands, the right-of-way of the city lane is 16 feet, but we actually have, from the existing center of the lane to the proposed structure, is actually going to be 10 feet, which is plenty of room to turn around a small car, a motorcycle, lawnmowers, that sort of thing that we intend to use the structure for.
Okay, thank you. I have a question for staff.
Sure.
It's can you repeat the exact variance request, you know, the actual?
Of course. Petitioner is requesting approval to encroach the rear yard setback by 5 feet. The petitioner is requesting to replace the current brick wall with the rear wall of a new accessory structure.
There's not an issue, but the fact, I mean, it looks like there's going to be two accessory structures on this property now.
That's correct. And I do have the other email and letter if you'd like me to read that, since we don't have it digitally.
That'd be great.
This was to Mr. Lotson. I'm writing in reference to the request for the residents on 401 Washington Avenue to replace the current brick wall with the rear wall of a new garage structure. As the owner of 402 East 48th Street, directly across the lane of 401 Washington Avenue, we protest the removal of the fence, one of Ardsley Park's iconic features, and the addition of a new outbuilding. These alterations would compromise the historic integrity of Ardsley Park. Should the present owners wish to use garage space, we recommend they use the significant garage space they already own. To choose to live in Ardsley Park is to choose to respect the history of this neighborhood and its historical integrity rather than construct new buildings. In the words of Robert Frost, good fences make good neighbors. And that was from Mr. and Mrs. William Lee Belford Jr.
Yep. All right. The petitioner, I would like to give you a moment to rebut some of the opposition you've heard.
Okay. I'll start by saying that the portions of the wall are not all structurally sound, and we've already removed a very unstable section that was curved into the yard because it was leaning so severely. And so I know that that back wall is not necessarily 100% intact, but also the back wall actually can't even be seen from the back alley because of the bamboo. So I do understand this person's philosophy and theory, but I'm not sure that it actually in practice is something that we could apply to this.
And if we had to build the structure anyways without the setback, we would still end up having to remove the bamboo on the wall to get access for the construction of the structure. So the wall would probably be coming down regardless.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for... Okay, we have a question for staff from the board. Mr. Condon?
Is there an accessory structure on the other side of the proposed garage? When I was looking last night at the photos and such, there's such a tree canopy there, it's difficult to tell.
So on this subject property we're talking about?
On the one that's directly behind it on the 48th Street side of the lane.
So up on the screen here,
right.
You're talking about this corner one right here. So there is one in the corner that kind of bounds Reynolds. And there is one on the eastern corner, one parcel in, but it doesn't look to be right on the property line. Now, these property lines aren't survey accurate necessarily, but it doesn't look to encroach the alley lane as much as what that first building does on the property to the west.
That was my primary concern. The, you know, with a 16 foot wide lane, if there were back to back accessory buildings, it sometimes could be
sure.
Difficult, if not impossible, to pull into them.
Correct.
But where there's nothing on that side. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for staff or the petitioners? I have a question for staff. Is it what is the staff position on in this area, you know, having two accessory structures on a single lot like this?
Ordinance doesn't dictate that you can only have so many structures. You know, we do kind of take the viewpoint that there was an existing garage, which was turned into an apartment, and then a second story was added to it. But we can't hold that against the applicant or petitioner as well. So it's kind of a moot point at that. So we don't really have an opinion about, you know, one versus two accessory structures.
But the
as long as it's in keeping with the ordinance.
And the proposed addition does not exceed the minimum lot coverage requirements.
No, sir.
The maximum lot coverage requirements.
Correct. It does not.
All right. Is anyone in the public wishing to speak on this matter, for or against this matter? Raise your hand electronically. All right. Hearing none, I'm going to declare this public hearing closed. And staff's recommendation, could you repeat it again? The charge is it's a 5-foot rear yard setback request. And
correct, Mr. Chairman. So staff's recommendation was denial of the requested encroachment of 5 feet into the rear yard setback for the following reasons. Building on the property line is a potential issue regarding safety and access in the rear lane that multiple properties use for access. The variance requested would be an expansion of a non-conforming structure location. The variance requested is not the minimum variance required for such construction, as the petitioner could construct the structure while conforming to the current zoning ordinance, and adequate justification from the ordinance is not present for staff to recommend approval.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Holloway. All right, I'll entertain a motion. Staff recommendations for denial. Mr. Brown? All right, that's been a motion to deny the petition and accept staff recommendation. Is there
second.
A seconded by Mr. Griffin? Mr. Hall, how do you vote?
In favor of the motion.
Okay, Mr. Brown.
No, the motion's.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Griffin?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. So that's a unanimous petition has been denied. All right. 1606 Brownville Court variance request.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This one's a bit odd, so I have to do some back history on this one. Map while I go through that. So the petitioner is requesting an after-the-fact approval of a variance to allow the front building setback to be 14 feet. The ordinance required front building setback is 5 to 10 feet in this neighborhood. The subject property is located at 1606 Brownville Court within the TR1 zoning district. It is a 0.11 acre conforming lot with single-family residence. As you can see here in the aerial map, there is no residence here at the time of the aerial being taken, but since a house has been constructed. In error throughout April of It's also important to note here before I get into the history that the subject property has received a certificate of appropriateness from the Savannah Historic Preservation Commission for Kyler Brownville District on July 22nd of this summer. In error throughout April of 2020, the City of Savannah's Development Services Department approved and issued all required permits for the new construction of a single family residence at 1606 Brownville Court without the project having been reviewed by either the Historic Preservation Commission or MPC staff and Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals for a variance request. Staff was notified of this by a citizen after the construction was almost complete. Once staff was made aware, the petitioner agreed to apply for an after-the-fact COA and then file for a variance request with the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals. So this property actually caught fire and burned down, and then the rest of the structure was demoed, and then a new house was built. And that, as previously described, that's kind of the process of how we've gotten to this point right now. It's important to note that the adjacent properties, of which there are 12 in the same block, appear to have a front building setbacks in excess of 13 feet. The petitioner is requesting to have their front building setback at 14 feet. And as far as general consistency with the ordinance, while the ordinance establishes the minimum setbacks in order to protect properties and rights of way from potentially adverse effects, the variance requested, while not consistent with the ordinance, is in keeping with the pattern of development for this neighborhood, and more specifically the block which this residence is located. The location would not be injurious to the neighborhood or otherwise detrimental to the public health, welfare, or safety. It's also important to note that special circumstances do exist on this property as it relates to the residence, as it has already been constructed. Through error in April of 2020, building permits were issued without approval from the MPC or a variance being requested for that setback requirement or a COA for the neighborhood. The special circumstances that exist are not the fault purely of the petitioner. It is both the petitioner as well as the City of Savannah which led to these circumstances. Staff's recommendation is that the requested after-the-fact variance is in keeping with the surrounding patterns of development along Brownville Court, as well as the surrounding neighborhood. The 14-foot front yard setback is a pre-existing non-conforming condition of all the buildings on this block that precedes the standing within the current zoning ordinance which is in place. Due to these special conditions and the comments of staff noted previously, staff recommends approval of the variance from the standard as requested. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, any questions for staff? I'm sorry. Is the petitioner present?
Yes, sir. This is Gary Udinski.
Mr. Udinski. All right. Thank you. Would you like to say anything?
No, just two things. I appreciate the work that you guys have done, and I know it's a tough job, but the MPC in granting their certificate of appropriateness also made the recommendation that the zoning variance be approved. We were just trying to keep in context this new house along with the other houses in the neighborhood. So I'd appreciate your positive approval. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Is anyone here wishing to speak for or against this petition? Please raise your hand electronically. We do have someone wishing to speak. One second, and I'll recognize you. Is there Brenda? And I apologize if I butcher this. Is it Hedges? Is there Brenda? H-E-G-G-S, maybe? You may be muted. You may need to unmute. Okay. I'm going to give one. We may be experiencing some technical difficulties. I'm just going to give her 1 second to see if we can give her a chance to get on because she's raised her hand. Brenda, if you're here, please go ahead and speak. All right. Anyone else wish to speak for or against this petition? And we'll try to straighten that out if she's wishing to speak. Anyone else wish to speak for or against, please raise your hand electronically. Nope. All right, one last chance for Brenda. The board have any, I'm gonna declare this public hearing closed. The board have any questions for staff? Or if not, I'll entertain a motion. And staff recommendation for approval.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the variance request for 1606 Brownville Court.
Got a motion on the floor. Can I get a second? Seconded by Mr. Brown. Mr. Hall, how do you vote? And the vote is for approval of the requested variance.
I vote for approval.
Mr. Brown? Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Griffin?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. That vote is unanimous. 111 East Jones Street, appeal of a decision. Mr. Lotson, you're going to be presenting this for us?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Hello to everyone. The item before you at this time is an appeal of a decision for a certificate of appropriateness for property at 111 East Jones Street. The petitioner is appealing that COA that was previously approved by historic preservation staff on April 1st of 2020. That approval included amendments to a previously approved COA from November of 2019. The appellant contends that technical errors were made in review in the review process, including required documents for submittal and the authority to review on staff level. And the appellant has provided some exhibits, one of which I'm going to share with you now, which outlines the basis of the appeal. The appellant contends that the basis of the appeal is that there are two factors, the east elevation of the proposed three-story addition, which in their opinion is visible from the public right-of-way of East Jones Lane, was not provided in the application packet as required on the COA application form, and the well-established precedent that all elevations for new construction and additions visible from public rights-of-way be provided in order for a COA to be reviewed. And secondly, the appellant contends that the zoning ordinance outlines the circumstances in which the planning director may take action on an application and where the historic review board may take application. And in their opinion, the scope of work that was approved should have been a board review. The original petition was acted on by the Historic District Board of Review in November of 2019, as I mentioned. At that time, the board continued the hearing so that the petitioner could provide additional information and revise the drawings that were submitted during that meeting. On November 20th, staff was provided with the revised drawings, which met the conditions set by the board. The applicant then emailed staff requesting that the project be reviewed at staff level, and based on the review authority granted in the zoning ordinance, the historic preservation director made that determination, and it was reviewed in that manner. There is a attached timeline of events that I'm going to ask Leah Mahalik, the historic preservation officer, to go through to kind of outline the process from the very beginning of this review procedure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Leah Mahalik, Director of Historic Preservation for the MPC. Marcus went through the beginning portion of this, so I will pick up where he left off. So the board, as he mentioned, recommended made a decision for a continuance with several conditions that you can see here. And then a week later, the architect, who's John Deering, requested via email that staff review the petition because they're meeting all of the conditions set forth by the board. And this was his request. He used it based on this section of the zoning ordinance, which basically that section allows staff to review certain items. And then this was my response to him. Yes, based on this section, we will review the revisions at staff level, pending meeting another condition. So on November 25th, staff made a decision to approve the project here. And then a little bit later on, they actually reduced the scope of the work. And so staff approved the reduction in the scope of the work here as well. Basically, so there's a lot of going back and forth here, but staff felt that because it was a very large reduction in scope of the project, that it was appropriate for us to review it at staff level. So that is what we did here. And so the, as you saw, the applicant, the appellant is saying that staff did not have the right to review this change. I'd like to answer any questions if you have any. Sorry, did I miss something?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to take the board quickly to the appeal procedure, because that's really what this hearing is about today, not necessarily the outcome or the design review of the COA, but the appeal itself. And I wanted to bring this information to the board here. And the appeal procedures are as follows. When it is alleged that there is an error in a final written decision of any administrator, commission, or board authorized to make a final written decision with regards to the provision of this ordinance, an appeal by any aggrieved party may be taken to the Zoning Board of Appeals. So really, I just wanted to crystallize that that's what you're hearing today, is whether the board finds that there was an error made by, in this case, staff. The action by the Zoning Board of Appeals follows the criteria outlined here. The board shall determine whether the first decision maker erred in application or interpretation of the ordinance. The board may reverse or affirm wholly or in part, or may modify the final written decision that was made. To this end, the Zoning Board of Appeals shall have all the powers of the administrative official, commission, or board from whom the appeal is taken. In other words, you can uphold the decision, you can overturn the decision, or modify the decision in any way that the board deems appropriate. Thirdly, a motion to reverse, affirm, or modify the final written decision shall include a statement of the specific reasons, including the proposed findings of fact that support the decision. The findings of fact shall be based on the same evidence received by the first decision maker. If a motion to reverse or modify is not made, or such motion fails to receive the affirmative vote of a majority of members present, then the appeal shall be denied. And finally, the appellant shall have the burden of proof. So I just wanted to outline the board's charge as it relates to the appeal process.
Thank you. Anything else from staff? We have a question for staff. Is that right? Mr. Brown?
Mr. Laughlin, can you?
Leah?
Either one.
Sorry.
Just trying to condense what the error was and did it have anything to do with meeting condition number four of the historic review board?
And I would suggest, Mr. Brown, that clarification on that issue might be best to come from the appellant, but they did provide this exhibit with items one and two that are on the screen now, which is their basis for the appeal. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, looks to me that there may be two or three allegations of error is what it appears to be stating. But if the petitioner is present, we would like to hear from the petitioner. So, petitioner present?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Ellen Harris. I'm with Ethos Preservation, and I am representing Gene Glover in the appeal of the staff decision from April 1st. First, I just want to say thank you for hearing this petition, and I want to thank MPC staff for the review of this project. Mr. Watson, is it possible for me to share my screen? I do have a presentation I'd like to walk the Zoning Board of Appeals through, if I may.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we'll set that up. Just give us 2 seconds here to be able to do that. Hang on 1 second.
Thank you. Okay, is my screen visible to the board now?
It is.
Okay, great. So again, thank you for hearing this. I'll just quickly walk you through the basis of the appeal. Just to give you a quick overview of the project itself, that is the subject of the appeal. It's a three-story addition to the rear of 111 East Jones Street. So the photograph that you see here is 111 East Jones Street, and you can see from these drawings, the original building stops about right here, and the addition comes forward to the north. It's a three-story addition. There's a rendering that shows the extents of the addition. And the complete, these are drawings from the architect in their submittal packet, and they're available to you on the attachment as Exhibit 1 if you'd like to see it in full. The appellant in this case is Ms. Glover, who owns 113 East Jones Street. So it's the adjacent property that you see here. And it's important to note that the proposed addition does extend to the property line adjacent to 113 East Jones Street. Let's see. My screen it's not changing the slide. Bear with me 1 second, please.
No problem.
Oh, there we go. Okay, regarding an abbreviated timeline, as Ms. Mihalik went through earlier, this was first heard by the Historic Review Board and was unanimously continued to the next meeting back in November of last year. The revised drawings a few weeks later were approved by MPC staff. On April 1st, the drawings were revised again under a new file number, and it was again approved by MPC staff. And finally, they were revised again through the stamping of construction documents by MPC staff. So there was one hearing by the Historic Review Board and then three subsequent approvals by MPC staff. And I'm going to talk a little more about that, the Historic Review Board hearing, in just a moment. So there are two bases. For the appeal, two technical errors which we feel were occurred in the processing and approval of this project. The first was an incomplete application, which I'm going to address first, and the second was a lack of authority for a staff decision. The application for a certificate of appropriateness includes very specific checklists for each type of submittal. There are separate checklists for signs, a separate checklist for new construction, alterations, additions, etc. Unless otherwise noted, all the items on the checklist are required to be submitted to be considered complete. On the image that you see on the left is a partial list of the requirements for additions, and in the list includes exterior elevations. It's important to note that all elevations that are visible from the public right-of-way are required, and public right-of-ways do include both streets and lanes, and vegetation is not a factor in visibility. And then, of course, if we reference NUZO gives us guidance as to the process for receiving an application, reviewing it for completeness, and it states that incomplete applications will not be accepted for review. In this particular case, the east elevation was missing from the submittal packet. It was missing from the original submittal in November of 13th for the Historic Review Board, and it was missing in every subsequent review that was approved by MPC staff. The circle in red is the east elevation that you see here. These two photographs are taken from Jones Lane, which is a public right-of-way, so it counts as visibility. And this is the subject property in question here. So there's a close-up here. This is where the addition is proposed to be. And as you can see, the third floor of the addition would be easily and readily visible from Jones Lane. The second floor addition would also be visible, albeit through the open porch at the adjacent property of 113 East Jones Street. These are the elevations that were submitted with the COA packet. Again, you have the complete submittal packet. That's Exhibit 1. And as you can see, only two elevations were provided, the south elevation and the west elevation. The east elevation is missing. The architect also provided perspective drawings with the application. And there's, you know, a great deal of detail and information on the south elevation, but nothing on the east elevation. In the southeast perspective, which you can see here, it appears that the adjacent building would actually be covering this wall, but that's actually not true. As we've seen from the photographs, it's actually set back, and that's more obvious in the other perspective drawings. Mm-hmm. Now, typically things that are missing from the submittal packet, like elevations, are noticed in the initial review for completeness when the application is turned in. And typically they're caught early, the applicant's notified and can provide the missing information. But sometimes the missing information is not noticed in that early review, and it isn't caught until the staff recommendation or report is underway. And when that happens, staff typically notes the missing information in their recommendation as a condition. Depending on how significant it is, staff may recommend approval with the condition that it be provided, or if it's very significant, staff may recommend a continuance until the missing information is provided. I did a search back for just less than the last 3 years and located at least six applications where elevations were missing in the submittal packet and requested by staff in their recommendation. So for example, here, I'll run through these very quickly for you. This is 128 East Jones Street, the very similar application type. It's a rear addition on the building. The west elevation is missing. Staff requests additional information, including the west elevation, be provided. This is a larger project. This is 415 East Oglethorpe. Two elevations, the north and south, both facing Oglethorpe Lane, were not provided. They were requested by staff. 510 East Jones Street, also in addition, the west elevation is missing, and staff is requesting it as a condition of approval. 27 Montgomery Street includes the addition of an elevator, and even in this regard, this small elevator on the top of the building, staff is requesting elevations of the elevator overrun. On MLK, it involved a rehabilitation as well as a new construction. This is the north elevation of the addition on the rear of the building. Staff is requesting additional information on that. And finally, 504 East Liberty Street, east and west elevations are not included. These were both blank facades, and staff is requesting those elevations be provided, along with it, some additional architectural detailing be added. So why does this matter? As you can see from the floor plan here on the east elevation, there are no windows or doors on this facade. Not only does it matter because it sets a precedent for future projects to omit relevant and pertinent information, it also has a major impact on the visual compatibility of the project, which is essentially the purpose of having design review. For example, things like the stucco scoring pattern or lack thereof is unknown. If there's a change in the material on the wall, it's unknown. Any gutter or flashing information like location, design, color is unknown. Any roof trim detail, any architectural detailing like recessed faux windows or other or similar details are not provided. So they may or may not be included. We simply don't know. And the Historic Review Board may request these changes, or they may request alternative changes. And these details have the potential to impact neighboring properties owners, as well as the visual compatibility of the project as a whole. The second error that we contend occurred is the lack of authority for a staff decision. All the staff approvals that have occurred for this project have referenced and predicated the Historic Review Board decision of November 13th of 2019. This, as you see on your screen, and there's a complete copy of this transcript, is Exhibit 10 on your agenda. If one refers back to the actual verbatim transcript itself, it's clear that the motion made and was unanimously approved by the board is specifically that this project return to the board for review and approval. In fact, Chairman Lynch clarifies with the board member who made the motion, Board Member Isaacs, that it's her intention for the project to come back to the board for approval and not for review by staff. Board Member Isaacs confirms this with the clarification that's continued to the next board meeting. However, as we've heard, staff approved this project just a few weeks later. Notwithstanding the specific motion and intention of the board, there are three other documents that specify the types of projects that staff can review as opposed to the board. NUSA provides a list of items that can be reviewed at staff level. Things like minor changes, such as color, window and door replacement, although it notes that the opening sizes shall remain the same, shutters, awnings, some signage, but not all. And everything else is referred to the Historic Review Board. Additionally, this Certificate of Appropriateness application provides a nearly identical list of staff versus board reviews. And as you can see, staff reviews are very limited in terms of their scope. And then finally, this is a copy of the Historic Review Bylaws, which is attached as Exhibit 7. Again, provides reference for staff decisions and a list of minor repairs. Doors and windows, again, as long as they're not changing the size or creating new, can be reviewed at staff, roof changes, color changes, et cetera. And this list could only be revised by a majority vote of the entire board. There's no mention in any of these lists of a reduction in scope, which has gone from the depth of which has gone from 12 feet to 9 feet, and then increased again to 10 feet, all reviewed at staff level. In the staff decision that was approved on April 1st, the nature of the request describes the proposed changes. It was the projection has decreased from 12 feet to 9 feet. That has also led to a decrease in lot coverage from 53% to 51%. The garden level has changed in width. A window has been removed from the design. A pair of windows has been added to the design, and the grouping of windows on the rear has been revised. These are noted as mass and scale changes, as well as windows for the addition. And again, this while there was a reduction from 12 to 9 feet, it was later increased to 10 feet. That was reviewed by staff. And I want to emphasize here the respect and appreciation I have for MPC staff. I know it's a tough job, and the pressure to review and approve things at staff level can be intense. I will say that not once in my 13 years at the MPC did I ever hear a petitioner say that they enjoy coming before the Historic Review Board. No offense to the Historic Review Board. But we are all human, and sometimes errors can be made, as in the case here. So the basis of the appeal is twofold. The first is based on an incomplete application. The east elevation, which is very visible from the public right-of-way, was not provided. The application and other requirements make it clear that all elevations visible from the public right-of-way must be provided. The second basis is a lack of authority for staff to make this decision. The Historic Review Board at their November meeting made it very clear that the petition was to come back to the board and not staff, and was even clarified in that motion. Despite this, staff approved the project on three separate occasions. Additionally, the three documents that regulate the scope of work reviewed at staff level versus board level require that the project go back to Historic Review Board. It's important to note that the Historic Review Board never approved this project. Therefore, we are requesting that this board determine that staff erred in the approval of the project and that the decision be reversed as outlined in the NUSO section 3.23.6. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions for the petitioner or the appellant from staff, Mr. Brown?
Ellen, I have this is a minor detail, but it may not be minor detail. 3.19.7, double I says material, and you mentioned it was a minor change in material. But is it considered stucco versus hardy board? Is that considered a minor detail?
I think that would really depend on the scope of the change. If that were a detail on a wall or something like that, then I think it could be considered minor. I think if it were an entire facade or something like that, then that would be a major detail. So it really just depends on the scope of that kind of change.
So what do you consider it, the minor detail or a major detail?
In this particular project, say if the east elevation were changed from stucco to hardy plank, is that your question?
Yes, because it had hardy plank. It was approved by the Historic Review Board.
I would probably, if for that kind of a material change on the east elevation, I would probably consider that a minor change in material. Assuming that the previous material change had already been approved.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for Ms. Harris? Okay. Hearing none, is that we'd like to hear from staff to rebut the testimony that was just given.
Thank you. Thank you. This is Leah Mahalik again. I do want to point out, this seems like the one that was continually skipped in the review, is item number two here, a material change or the new construction of walls, fences, screens, or paving. A material change does not refer to the difference between stucco and hardy. It refers to an immaterial change versus a material change, so a significant change. And I also want to point out that the portion of the staff report that she showed from April 1st, she didn't show the rest of the staff report where it says that almost all of those items are on the garden level and not visible from a public right of way, which means there was no purview. We listed all the changes, but that went on to say that the majority of them are not visible from the public right of way. And I'll, you know, can answer any other questions about some of the things that she mentioned as well, if you'd like, or I'm sure Marcus can too.
So any other questions for staff? Mr. Condon?
The first question is just a straightforward one that I didn't, when I reviewed this, this is a very, it's very complicated. That's clear. I reviewed this for a couple of hours last night reading documents, and it's very complicated. And so I just want to make sure that it's fair to everybody. The basic question is, why didn't it get kicked back to the Historic Review Board?
Does Ellen still have the screen?
I believe I do, but I don't know how to unshare it. I think
Julie's about to fix it. Here we go. So actually Ryan created this. Thank you very much, Ryan. He was actually the staff reviewer on most of this project. So John Deering, he is the architect, and we spoke several times about it. And he asked that based on this section of the ordinance, which is the same section that she's referencing, aren't we allowed to review this at staff level? And I took a look at it, and I replied, yes, based on that section, we will review the revisions at staff level. However, you're still not meeting one of the standards, which he continued to do at a later point. So that's why staff determined that we could review that. He cited a section for us. We examined the zoning ordinance and made that determination.
So your position is that you had the right to do it based on section 3.19.7.c?
Yes, sir.
Any other questions for staff? I have a question, Ms. Mahalik. Could you just restate again the, I'm going to go to the other point, which is to me a little more simpler point about the incomplete application. What is staff's position on that? Because, you know, are you saying that an east elevation was submitted, or are you saying it does not have to be submitted?
It was not submitted. It was not. I can't show Ellen's photograph again now, but I mean staff would contend that really is not a visible addition. I mean, there's a porch there, there's, you know, it immaterial to the decision, really.
I guess what you're saying is that there's that tree in front of it from the right of way. There's different issues where you really might, it would have been challenging to really show it. Is that what you're?
Yeah, exactly.
When we're talking about an application being complete or incomplete as far as showing elevations, is that just drawings? Would that count, or would it need to be pictures, or how would?
It can be handled in any number of ways. Staff usually determines whether what they've provided is sufficient evidence or not. So 9 times out of 10, photos and drawings are provided, or a photo saying, we don't think we need to provide this elevation. I'm not saying that necessarily happened this time. If it did, it wasn't documented in writing. But you know, there's always a lot of phone calls that go on during these applications too. But you know, with a lot of projects, we spend a lot of time figuring out whether they're complete or incomplete. And so that could be, but that could be shown to us from the applicant through drawings, through photos, through whatever means.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions for staff? And I'm going to first, before we go to the public, I would like to see if Ms. Harris would like to rebut anything. I'll give you just a couple of minutes max, Ms. Harris, if you would like to rebut anything staff just said.
Sure. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I just like to, if I may, share my screen once more to show the visibility from Jones Lane. I don't know if you can, let's see here. Okay, there you go. So this is from standing in Jones Lane. And again, that is a public right-of-way, so it counts as visibility. This is the subject property, 111 East Jones Street. The addition extends to the third floor, so it would be above. This is a two-story addition here, so it would be, you know, well above the two-story addition. Vegetation was mentioned. Vegetation, and I would ask Ms. Mihalik if I'm misstating, please correct me, but vegetation is not a factor in visual compatibility because trees can, you know, lose their leaves in winter or be cut down. So that's not a determining factor. So it's not only a visible above the porch, but also through the porch, albeit that would be minimal. Certainly what's going on above the porch would be significant. And I guess I just regarding the other factor about staff reviews versus board reviews, I would still contend that a reduction in the scope of work is not mentioned as a one of the elements that can be reviewed at staff level. It's the list is very clear in terms of color changes, window and door changes that are not that do not change the size. And other very minor things the list contends as. So that's all I'll add up unless you have any questions.
Okay, thank you. I believe we have Mr. Deering, who has raised his hand, would like to speak. John Deering. John Deering. Right now, your audio is showing off, Mr. Deering. See if you can fix that. All right. While he's trying to fix that, I'll ask, are there any other members of the public wishing to speak for or against this petition? Please raise your hand electronically. And of course, if Mr. Deering's ready, you're welcome to speak. I believe Mr. Yellen is on.
Yes, can you all hear me? John Deering here.
Yes, Mr. Deering, we can hear you.
Very good, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Well, first I'd like to point out that the applicant is focusing on the November HDBR submittal and the completeness of that application, which we are outside of the time period that is allowed to appeal the decisions that happen in November. I do believe there's a 30-day time limit for which one can appeal that. And I agree with Ms. Mihalik, the east elevation is really insignificant and it's not asked for often in many row house type projects because the visibility is so very limited. We did provide a 3D view, which has not been brought up by the applicant or the ZBA staff, that does show a glimpse of the east elevation. And you can see it's a blank stucco wall. There are many other projects that I did not list out individually, but that we have applied for HDBR approval for that were in row houses that we did not include the adjacent blank wall elevations because they were not necessary. And one in particular is 113 West Gordon Street, which under Ms. Harris's tenure as the preservation director, went through the historic review board process and didn't have an east or west elevation, which were simply blank walls. But again, I want to remind the board that we are past the 30-day time period for appeals for the November decision. And in speaking to the planning director's actions, if you actually were at the HDBR meeting in November, you would have heard many comments that some of them were simply confused about siting, and they did not necessarily, I'm not sure exactly what the thoughts of the board were, but it was like they were just simply confused. But there were really minor issues back in November that the board brought up to bring, you know, the drawings and the project back to the board. So staff decided that we had met all these conditions, and rightly so, and approved the project back in November. She again, in March and April, looked at the reduction in scope. And I want to remind the board again, this was a reduction in scope and a bettering of the project from a historic preservation standpoint. When you reduce the massing from a 12-foot depth to a 10-foot depth, and you reduce the lot coverage by about 2% in the historic district, that's quite a lot. It's a good thing. We also decided to maintain two southern facing historic windows on the second floor and not alter those. So I think the preservation director has done her job as preservation director in approving this application. I do want to point out that the petitioner had the opportunity in November to attend this meeting. It was publicly posted and properly posted. She lives right next door. She could have attended this meeting and had her say at the time. She did not. And now she's gone to great lengths to stop our client's progress on their addition, which was approved, rightfully so. Zero lot line living in the historic district is not easy. And when you have a porch that is adjacent to a property line and your neighbor decides to build a blank wall addition because that's what the building code and ordinances will allow, you simply have to deal with it. And this particular petitioner has been aggravating my clients at 111 East Jones Street throughout this entire process and has even filed a lawsuit against them, and they have had to go to court about this situation. But my clients are within their rights, and I think that staff has done everything that they can to help this progress through this difficult time and pandemic, and that's really the way I feel about it. I mean, there's certain things one must do to make things go forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deering. Any questions for Mr. Deering from the board? All right. Hearing none, I believe we have Mr. Yellen that wishes to speak.
Mr. Yellen, you're self-muted.
Can you all hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Harold Yellen on behalf of Tom and Allison White, who are the owners of 111 East Jones Street. I do have the privilege of attending many HRB meetings, and I suppose I do agree with Ms. Harris that I typically do not enjoy going to HRB meetings, but I still go. And the HRB is clearly about height and mass and design, and people who speak at those meetings should be architects and not attorneys. But as an attorney, I do know that design plans, once approved, are often tweaked after a decision. And if that change is not material, more often than not, it is done at a staff level. And that's how it's been done since I began practicing law 38 years ago. It makes sense, because if every change, every minor change had to come back to the HRB, there'd be this incredible flood, this incredible volume of items to be heard monthly. The agenda is long enough as it is, but if everybody had to come back for every single item, there'd be no movement at all. In this particular case, this matter was heard on November the 25th of 2019, and that's where Historic Review Board did approve a proposed projection in lot coverage and garden level. And I agree with Mr. Deering. This was pre-pandemic, and the time to have appealed that decision would have been on or before December 25th, and there was no appeal of any kind prior to that date. The only thing that possibly could be appealed now would be the decision of staff on April 1, where on that date, they reduced the projection, they reduced the lot coverage, and they reduced the garden level. And to me, all of these things are minor. These staff decisions were for design elements that were less than the design elements that had been approved on November 25th. NUZO section 319.7 clearly permits planning director to review minor changes. I believe that Leah Michalik deemed this to be a minor change, and we agree with the planning director, and we also agree with staff recommendation upholding the decision of the planning director. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Yellen. Any questions for Mr. Yellen? All right. We have Gene Glover, I believe, on the. Who is the appellant? Ms. Glover? You're self-muted at this time. If you'd like to speak, just let us know. Now you can speak, I believe. Ms. Glover? Okay. Do we have any other members of the public wishing to speak for or against this petition? You know, I guess in some ways the issue may be, at least as it pertains to the decision in April, whether it was a minor change or whether it was not a minor change, whether or not she had the authority to make that decision would be, I think, the issue. I agree with what I've heard thus far about, I think the completeness of the original application and all sounds like we're past that issue. I don't think we can delve into that issue, at least as it's been explained to me. But I do think that, you know, this issue about whether, which is kind of boiled down to really what we're here about, I feel like, I think that's the issue. Anybody from the public wishing to speak for or against? Ms. Harris, since you were addressed directly by Mr. Yellen, I will give you another minute if you'd like to rebut anything stated that you've heard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. I just wanted to correct a few inconsistencies that I heard in the testimony. Mr. Yellen did state that on November 13th, the Historic Review Board approved the projection, lot coverage, design details, et cetera. That is inaccurate. The Historic Review Board continued the petition, did not approve any of those elements on November the 13th. Regarding the comments that this isn't about the November 13th meeting and that it shouldn't be, the appeal is only about the April 1st meeting, I will say that all of the three staff reviews that were approved subsequent to the November 13th meeting used the November 13th meeting in the staff report to help justify the subsequent staff reviews. So we do feel that it's relevant because they refer back to that repeatedly time and time again. The statement also that Ms. Michalik made that the windows on the ground level and those other changes would not be visible from the public right of way, they absolutely would. There is no carriage house currently at 111 East Jones Street. So the entire facade from the garden level all the way up to the top is visible clearly from the lane, so that was also inaccurate. So it's not just about the east elevation or the changes that were made that Mr. Yellen referred to as tweaks. I would disagree with that. Even the staff reports states that they are changes to the mass and scale, and they and significant changes to the window configuration. And all those changes are still evident in the April 1st approval. This is not about the November 13th approval, except that it just sets a precedent for the April 1st approval. And that's all I will add. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you. Can we bring back up, and Alan, I don't know, how about this issue about whether it was a continuance, whether it was a decision by the board?
The board continued the petition at the November meeting. Yes, and subsequently, it was staff approvals. So there was never a board approval. Well, I say that, but so I'll show the May agenda. So the board is always well aware of every single petition that staff approves. So this is the May 13th, 2020 HDBR agenda, and we list and include all decisions of staff. And at any time, I mean, the board can, I'm sorry, we're, oh, it was April, my apologies. No, it couldn't have been. Thank you. I had it here a minute ago. There it is, right here. It's the April 1st decision in question. So this is right on the HDBR's agenda as an approved staff item. So they were well aware of the fact that staff approved this change.
My question is, if you felt as though it was necessary to send the original petition there and there was no approval given, and then there were minor tweaks to it, but it was, you know, it's not that much different than the original petition, in my opinion. Why did you feel as though it would not be necessary this time?
Again, with the items that staff is allowed to review administratively, we felt that it was within staff's purview to review those changes.
Well, do you believe it would be in staff's purview to have approved it originally without going to the board?
No, sir.
So what changed about the two different designs that you believe took it out of the board's purview and into staff's purview?
The scale of the project was reduced.
How much? I thought John Deering was talking about just a couple of percentage points of space. I mean, it is.
It's a couple percentages of lot coverage. It was also 3 feet of depth of the addition. And when you're talking about an addition that's 9 feet, going from 12 feet to 9 feet in the landmark district, that's, you know, pretty significant reduction. 2% of lot coverage, and I think it was a little bit less than that, but 2% of lot coverage in the landmark district is a significant reduction.
It sounds as though this is a discretionary call, typically.
Yes.
You have a lot of discretion, it sounds like.
I mean, as you saw the list about a material change that the new zoning ordinance allows staff to review, material changes, including new construction of walls and fences. And that's the one that we felt that made these reductions in scope fall within our purview.
But if someone were to want to put a brand new patio like this, or whatever you want to call it, a porch or, you know, add on, and you're saying that could be approved without going to the HDBR?
No, sir. We felt that the HDBR had already seen it.
Okay, that's what I'm kind of get to here.
Yeah,
okay.
They had already seen it. They were meeting the conditions of the HDBR's continuance, and it was shown here on their agenda, and they approved this agenda.
I get that.
Okay. Those are all the reasons that staff.
You know, but somebody can't give approval of something that they don't have the power to give approval for. I mean, you're kind of asserting that because it was on the April agenda that the board gave you the authority to do it or gave you the it either has to be approved by the board or it doesn't have to be approved by the board. It sounds as though you're telling me that application, if it were originally submitted with a 6-foot porch and, you know, that would have to go to the board.
Yes, sir.
And there's been no decision here by the board, correct?
No, so you want to explain procedurally how that works, Marcus?
I just wanted to add, Mr. Chairman, I think that the board's action in April does constitute an approval of this item because this item is on the agenda, and I'm sorry. And the item was previously heard by the board, and the action that they took, the continuance, they continued it with specific requests, and staff determined that those requests had been met.
They continued it. They did not grant any sort of approval at that meeting. They just continued it, correct?
That's correct.
And then, now let me, can you scroll back down this agenda that's on our screen?
Which
is it, are you trying to, am I hearing y'all saying that this is almost like, acts like a consent agenda? See, it doesn't look like a consent agenda to me.
It's a list of approved staff reviews that have been done since the previous board meeting.
And does the board vote necessarily on that at all? I mean, is it any kind of, I mean.
Yes, so at the beginning of the meeting, they vote to approve the agenda, which includes all of those sections, obviously. Adoption of the agenda, including obviously item number 10, which is approved staff reviews.
I'm troubled by this. I mean, it's not optimal. But then again, Ms. Harris, remember, there was an uh-huh that wasn't optimal either. Things happen. But any questions for staff? Mr. Brown?
Yeah, I think this is a real fine line, if you could, Lee, between minor and major. And when you have a HBR continuance, and for you to make that decision, I guess, when do you decide when it's a minor change and a major change? Is there any ordinance that guides the difference between minor and major?
It's a discretion, discretionary to some extent.
But my comment is that I think it would be wise, especially for something at such a high profile as this address, is that it might be best to err on the side of caution and go back to the HBR, but that's my opinion. No, the question is there some regulation that determines?
I mean, I don't have the ordinance right in front of me. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The difference between minor and major. Who determines that?
Without having the ordinance right in front of me, I do not know for a fact whether there's a definition of minor and major in the ordinance now.
We probably needed to look at that. You know, I. And while we're waiting on that, is anyone from the public wishing to speak? I do have a message from Ms. Glover that said she's having technical issues, but she disagrees with the comments made by the MPC and Mr. Deering. If you have fixed your technical difficulties and would like to speak, Ms. Glover, you're welcome to speak at this time.
Okay, so this is what you're talking about with the minor right here. Is this the, because these are the review responsibility of the planning director list that Ellen showed before. So is this where we're talking about where it says minor changes? And then you want to know if that's defined? Okay.
Bring that back up, please.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
And so it provides the planning director may have the ability to review for minor changes to contributing resources, including color changes, windows and door replacements, roof replacements and shutter installations, and then a material change to walls or new construction of walls, fences, screens, or paving, the erection, placement, or alteration of any non-illuminated sign exceeding 3 feet, the erection, placement, or alteration of awnings, Well, which one would you say you're leaning on, the minor changes to contributing resources?
No, sir. Of material change, well, which is what I was talking about earlier. It doesn't mean material from stucco to hardy board. It means immaterial versus a material change.
Well, the way I read that is it's material change to or the new construction of walls, fences, screens, or paving.
And that's exactly what this is.
And how is this? I mean, to me, does this fall in the definition of a wall or a fence or a screen? I mean, we're talking about the entire project. We're not talking about just the minor alteration. I mean, I think we got to be talking about, did you even have the authority? Does this board, staff have the authority from the beginning on this overall project?
I mean, it sounds like that's what's in your.
And what would you, what word would you say this project falls under? Walls, fences, screens, or paving?
Walls, new construction of walls.
But you know, if that could cover almost anything, with your definition you're giving me, that, I mean, because this is not a wall necessarily, this is more than that. Anyway, all right.
Do you want me to look up whether there's a definition of minor and major? So.
Well, I just feel like this, to me, it's a stretch to say that this project falls under that section. I mean, I just have a little bit. But anyway, but that's, you know, this is why we're here.
Yes.
anyone else wishing to speak on this matter, electronically or not? Do we have any questions from the board? Mr. Condon.
Is the appeal based on the dates? If this is all based on the original meeting, and we go 30 days past the original meeting, is there grounds for the appeal?
My view on that is that I agree with Mr. Yellen about the original things not being subject to appeal because the time had passed. But and the idea that just because you're basing it off of that meeting, you know, your decisions made in April, staff based it on the meetings in November, that doesn't necessarily mean that it tolls the statute. So, I mean, I think that's over with, okay, in my opinion.
All right. And then the other answer you already gave me. Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Okay. Is there anyone else wishing to speak for or against this matter? Raise your hand electronically. All right. Hearing none, declare this public hearing closed. All right. Now, I'll entertain a motion. I think we see that staff's recommendation, obviously. What does staff have a recommendation on this? It's not really, because staff's being challenged, I would think. But okay.
Mr. Chairman, our recommendation, and I'll just pull it up here on the, if I can get back to the staff report, I think. Our recommendation is that the decision regarding the COA be upheld. The petitioners appealing, obviously, the decision. So we're recommending that the decision be upheld based on the finding that we believe staff had the authority to make that decision.
And the issues about this, I mean, I think that the statute is going to be a challenge for the applicant, the appellant here. All right. I'll entertain a motion.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, before you accept the motion, can I just remind the board regarding the appeal procedures to reference that when making a motion?
Yes, sir. I mean, I'm troubled by the fact that this project did not have to go and get approval before the board in the way that I would like to see it get approval. But I think that we're too late for that. I think now we're down to what occurred in April, which is troubling as well, because I guess you have to look at it as though that decision's made. There's no recourse necessarily, and then you have this decision made in April based off of what may or may not have been a proper, but which is in our past. Any motion?
I make a motion.
Mr. Condon?
Chairman, I make a motion that the appeal of the decision for 111 East Jones Street be denied based on the fact that the time for the appeal has expired, and based on the fact that in May, the Historic Review Board approved the decision of the historic supervisor.
And could you also add to that to make a finding that the alterations done in the alterations done at that time period were minor?
And that the alterations done during that time period were minor.
Okay. All right. Can I get a second? Is there a second?
Second.
That's Mr. Hall. You seconded it?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So that's a motion and a second. I'll entertain. I mean, we're going to vote. Mr. Hall, how do you vote?
In favor of the motion.
Yes. Mr. Brown? All right. Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Griffin?
Yes.
All right. And I vote yes. So it passes 4-1. All right. 503 Orchard Street, variance request.
Mr. Chairman, the item at 503 Orchard Street is a variance request related to off-street parking at this location. The subject property is located on the southwest corner of Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard and Orchard Street. It's within a TN3 zoning classification. This is a portion of the highlighted property located here. And you can see an additional 10-foot strip adjacent to this property. I'll give you some detail about that property here in just a second. The subject property is developed with a two-story structure that was built in approximately 1950. The petitioner intends to renovate the structure and use the ground floor for a proposed boutique retail store. In August of 2020, the petitioner purchased the adjacent 700 square foot parcel, which was a right-of-way remnant adjacent to Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard that was purchased from the city of Savannah. That remnant was subsequently combined with 503 Orchard Street. As you can see in this plat that was recently recorded. Required parking for the use is calculated one space for each 225 square feet. Based on that calculation, the use would require four off-street parking spaces. One thing to note is that historically there has been no off-street, legal off-street parking spaces associated with this property. The vacant lot you see adjacent to it is not part of 503 Orchard Street, but historically, parking has taken place on that right-of-way that was recently purchased by the applicant, which is it was 10 feet wide and 70 feet deep, and so it was added to the Orchard Street site. As I mentioned, the petitioner intends to establish a boutique at this location, which is a permitted use within the TN3 zoning classification. In review of the requirements for granting a variance, we walked through those and find that generally the petitioner is requesting what is required for the use. The ordinance goes into general consistency and whether the variance would be consistent with the intent of the ordinance in the comp plan, or should it be injurious to neighbors or otherwise detrimental. The ordinance establishes minimum parking standards to address off-street parking needs for businesses. Often circumstances present themselves to grant justification for relief from these requirements. Those could be existing conditions, including dimensional constraints and development patterns that are historic. Sometimes those factor into justifying relief for parking standards. As I mentioned, the subject property was originally developed without off-street parking. But I should add that on-street parking is quite common along Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in this area. This portion is south of Victory Drive, so there's very little non-residential uses in that portion of Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. And when the city recently did the sidewalks and the crosswalks, and they also striped on-street parking on MLK in this area, which empirically is used very little. Relative to special conditions under circumstances which might be peculiar to this property, staff did find that the property, as I mentioned, was not developed with parking, but the applicant has gone to the extent of adding as much property as possible, reasonably, to the property to provide some additional space. Relative to special conditions that are not purely financial, the circumstances related to this request, we don't believe are not purely financial. The provision of off-street parking is limited by the size of the property. And as to the literal interpretation of the provisions regarding whether it would deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed by other properties in the same zoning district, the literal interpretation of the provisions of the regulations would deprive the applicant of some rights enjoyed by others in the same area. In addition, denial of relief would limit the petitioner's ability to use the property for permitted use within the zoning district. In terms of item D, which is the minimum variance requirement, staff finds that the variance is not the minimum necessary to make possible the reasonable use of land because of the fact that she has acquired additional property. Based on that finding, staff is recommending approval of a three-space variance and not a four-space variance, with the condition that the applicant provide one off-street parking space within the 10-foot strip that was recently acquired from the city of Savannah for the purpose of meeting the minimum parking requirement. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
And that, what you just stated, is exactly the written opinion of the staff, right?
That's correct.
Okay,
yes, sir.
Thank you. All right. Any questions for staff? Mr. Brown?
Well, I just can't see from the photo very well. Is there a curb cut there, or does she have to request a curb cut?
There is an existing curb cut. It's a little difficult to see here, but this had been previously used as a driveway, but it was always city right-of-way until recently.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for staff? Okay. Hearing none, is the petitioner present? You can raise your hand electronically and we'll recognize you.
Ms. All right. Ferguson.
Ms. Ferguson? Hello?
This is Ms. Ferguson. I'm present. Hello?
Hello, Ms. Ferguson. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And yourself?
We're good. Would you like to say anything, or do you have any questions?
I don't have anything to say. I'm just here to answer any questions. And I do have something to say. The curb cut, I had put in 2000. I think in 2000, they MPC awarded me to cut the curb back in 2000. Because I had an in-house business and an in-house salon at that location. So I do provide parking in front on that driveway that I've had already. So by me buying additional space, it made it much more easier for the car to pull up and have more room to park on the side of the building.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Ferguson? Mr. Condon?
Hello, Ms. Ferguson. I'm really excited about your proposal. I'm very familiar with that neighborhood and spent several months working on a project restoring a worker's cottage diagonally across the street from it. So I'm excited to see you doing something with the house. I know that there are three designated parking spaces on MLK next to the house, and then with the fourth curb cut. Do you have any issue with putting a driveway in to add that fourth space?
No, I don't have an issue with putting a driveway in. I'll put a driveway in.
And I noticed in the letter that you had sent something about a snow cone facility. Have you talked to health about that to make sure that you can do that? We don't want to get you in a situation where you could get in trouble.
Yes, I have spoke with Emily, and we are in contact about the snow cone business. She sent me all the guidelines. So I'm just waiting for the variance parking to be approved to move forward.
Okay. Yeah, that area is really a terrific spot. We've got a new food truck, food court going in across the street, and there's a lot of renovation of homes in that area. So I think you've got a good spot there, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much. And I've been in contact with Mr. Hoffman across the street. We talk often.
All right. We have Naomi Woods wishing to speak. Ms. Woods, are you available?
She's self-muted, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Woods, you're self-muted. So if you can unmute, you can speak if you wish to speak. All right, we're going to give you a couple more seconds.
Can you hear me now?
Is this Ms. Woods?
Yes.
Hello, Ms. Woods. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. My question is, where is the parking space? Is it going? I guess that would be vertical in the same direction as the house, or how's the parking going to be? Because I'm one of the owners of the vacant lot, and that's the only concern I have. We don't want anybody blocking the lot or parking, I guess, on Orchard Street. So that's what I can't figure out. Where I see there's a sidewalk that's been put in there. So is the sidewalk going to be removed for that parking space to go in there?
Ms. Woods, I think we can try and get an answer for you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Ms. Woods, the access for the parking is from Orchard Street, not from MLK, but the parking space itself would be parallel to the home, between the home, the structure, and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. If that's...
Right. It'd be parallel and perpendicular?
I'm sorry.
Perpendicular, right? Okay. I mean, I think okay. That's right.
And so there is enough space for how many parking spaces for Ms. Ferguson?
The staff is requiring at a minimum three of that lot. Is that correct? No. One on the lot. I'm sorry, one on that lot.
Okay. Ms. Ferguson, do you think your customers will know not to block the lot?
Let us ask the questions and all. We just can't have people going back and forth, you know.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
That's my concern.
If you have a question, go ahead and ask the question and we'll try and get an answer for you.
Okay. Will there be ample parking for 503 Orchard? Is that ample parking?
We're going to have Mr. Lotson, who's with the MPC, answer you.
Ms. Woods, let me just clarify what the petitioner is requesting and what's before the board here today. Currently, this property has zero off-street parking spaces that meet the parking space requirements for the city of Savannah. The petitioner requested a variance for four off-street parking spaces, which means they're required to have four based on the use that they want to create at this property. And they requested to have relief from that requirement, essentially to not be required to have any spaces on site. What staff has recommended is that the petitioner create one space on site between the structure and MLK, and then they'd be granted relief on three parking spaces.
Okay. I guess my concern is just knowing how people are, if they can't find a parking space, then they would come over to Orchard Street, and we didn't want the lot blocked. That would be my concern, or somebody trying to jump the curb and park on the vacant lot, since it is a vacant lot.
Mr. Lotson, did you get that?
Yes, ma'am. Understanding that concern, we believe in review of this petition that the on-street parking that exists that is striped on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard would be the most likely use of parking. I don't believe there is permitted on-street on Orchard Street in terms of striped spaces. So anyone parking on Orchard Street illegally, that would be just like parking illegally on any other street.
Okay. Well, thank you for clarifying that.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a question for staff. Well, I mean, she has a vacant lot next to the house. Why is she not able to provide more off-street parking there? I mean, since it's required.
Huh? That vacant lot is owned by another party.
I'm confused. Okay, so whenever we're talking about the lot she required, it's that little strip.
Yes.
I got you. Okay. All right. And at that spot has approval from the MPC, that little curb cut that she's talking about? She said that one spot got approval back in 2000 or something? 2008?
Yeah, there was a previous use that was established, a hair salon in this property, and it was done at that time.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Any questions for the staff or the petitioner? Anyone wishing to speak for or against this petition? Please raise your hand electronically. All right. Hearing none, I'm going to declare this public hearing closed. And I'd ask for staff to refresh us as to our charge.
Mr. Chairman, the petitioner requested in their application a four-space variance, parking variance from the four-space requirement. Staff is recommending a three-space variance with the condition that they provide one space on site.
Okay. All right. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we accept staff approval or staff recommendation as it is outlined for the approval of the variance at 503 Orchard Street.
Thank you, Mr. Condon. Can I get a second? Seconded by Mr. Brown. Mr. Hall, how do you vote?
In favor of the motion.
Mr. Brown? Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Griffin?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. It's unanimous. Congratulations. Thank you. All right. 919 East 39th Street, variance request.
I'm not going. Mr. Chairman, the applicant for the property at 919 East 39th Street is requesting approval of a 7-foot lot width variance for a proposed 2-lot minor subdivision at that location. The petitioner submitted a minor subdivision to the MPC. The finding was made that the proposed lot width did not meet the minimum requirement per the ordinance. So they're before you today to request that variance. This is a map of the subject property near the northeast corner of the intersection of East 39th Street. I'm sorry, southwest corner of East 39th Street and Ott Street. It is within a TR1 zoning classification. It's approximately 40 feet west of Ott Street. So you can see there is an existing parcel between the subject property and the road. The petitioner did, as I mentioned, request a final plat for the 2-lot minor subdivision. It is a 0.146 acre tract, which the petitioner intends to subdivide and build two houses, one house on each newly proposed lot. Within this block, there are 14 parcels. The development pattern includes both single family and two family residential uses within this block. lot widths range from 30 feet to 60 feet. So there's a quite a range of lot dimensions within both this block and surrounding blocks within this particular neighborhood. As you can see immediately to the rear of the subject property, there are existing 30-foot lots. The petitioner's proposal is to divide the 67-foot lot into two 33-foot lots, thereby requiring a 7-foot lot width variance. Based on the development pattern in the area, the proposed subdivision appears to be consistent with others in the block and on nearby blocks. This is a exhibit created by staff to show essentially that the proposed lot widths are capable of both meeting the side, rear, and front yard setbacks with the construction that is typical to the neighborhood. The petitioner also provided an exhibit showing examples of houses that have been constructed by the applicant in similar scenarios in terms of lot width. And they also provided an exhibit to show some of the other housing types that are within the neighborhood. As I mentioned, there is a varying housing types of both single family and multifamily within this area. In a review of the requirements of the ordinance relative to relief, staff did find that the requested variance would support the development of single family housing at this location and that the proposed lots are similar to others in the block and do not pose a detriment to the neighborhood at large. Based on that, we're recommending approval of the 7-foot lot width variance for 919 East 39th Street.
All right, Mr. Conn.
Good morning, Mr. Watson.
Good morning.
These are historically two lots. They've never been developed prior, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So the question that I have is, if you've got a 33-foot lot, and these are historically 33-foot lots, let's say one was maybe 30 and one was maybe 35 or something, why do they need a 7-foot reduction in setback?
Sure. This parcel is, and I'm going to show you if I find my map here. Because this property is a single parcel under one PIN number, in order to get a building permit, you have to establish those lot lines. So this obviously could continue to operate like this, but undeveloped. But in order to develop it, those lots have to be created legally. And the only way to do that legally is to go through the subdivision process, which the petitioner did do or is in the process of doing. So the comments from the subdivision review was that those lots are going to have to be created. And because they're not legal parcels at this time, they would have to be divided. And when divided, they are not meeting the minimum requirement of the zoning district. So based on that, we require them to be legally subdivided.
What's the minimum requirement in that zoning district?
40 feet.
40 feet.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. If we could go back to the subdivision plat, my primary concern with what I see is that there are 3-foot side setbacks for the buildable area of the lot. Is that correct?
Yes. The required side yard in this zoning district for interior lots is 3 feet.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. That's news to me. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Any other questions for staff? All right. Is petitioner present?
Yes. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Branch, and thank you, other members of the board. My name is Robert McCorkle, the law firm of McCorkle, Johnson & McCoy. I'm here today representing Hall Real Estate Services and Corey Hall, the petitioner. As Marcus mentioned, the subject property is 67 feet wide, which is made up of two historic 30-foot lots, lots 5 and lot 6, and a 7-foot portion of lot 4 in this ward. As you can see on the map, this lot is the largest lot on the block. The historic lots are around it, the historic lots making it up. Behind it across the street, there are several. We provided a map highlighting the ones that continue to be 30 feet, which remain throughout the neighborhood. We also provided some pictures that Marcus showed earlier of the buildings that are next door and across the street from this property, primarily which are two-story center block duplexes. This came about, as Marcus mentioned, because my client applied for a subdivision plat to subdivide these properties back down to 33-foot lots for the purposes of constructing two single-family residences on the lot. This is something my client has done in the surrounding area. If Marcus will pull up the exhibit we sent over that showed the house example I sent, that's from a few blocks away on 40th Street. Here's the example of what my client's constructed on a very similar size lot and in another part of this neighborhood, essentially. You can see I'm showing you this not because this is exactly what the house is going to look like, but because it's an example of the quality product that we're trying to inject into this neighborhood and onto this block. I think it's important to note that the MPC staff did approve the subdivision plat subject to us getting this variance. And it's also important to note that, as was mentioned by Marcus, the lots, as we've created them, do meet all the setback requirements. And more importantly, they also meet the minimum lot area requirement. So even though there's a minimum lot width requirement in this area of 40 feet, which is differs from the historic lot width, we do meet the minimum lot area requirement with our width and depth, even at 33 feet. And so we don't believe that this variance is doing anything detrimental to the neighbors. We are in fact bringing, you know, desirable single family residents into the area. And we would ask that the board would support staff's recommendation for approval.
All right. Thank you, Mr. McCorkle. Any questions for the petitioner? All right. Is anyone wishing to speak for or against this petition? Please raise your hand electronically and we'll recognize you. All right. Hearing none. Mr. McCorkle, is that all you have?
That's it.
Okay. All right. I'm going to declare this public hearing closed. I entertain a motion. Mr. Griffin's made a motion to accept staff's recommendation. Can I get a second? It's seconded by Mr. Brown. Mr. Hall, how do you vote?
Yes.
That's a yes for Mr. Hall. Mr. Brown? Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Griffin? And I'm a yes. So that is a unanimous approval. All right. Thank you, Mr. McCorkle. I'm sorry we didn't I did not think about you being on there. We would have tried to move you up, man. I'm sorry.
Absolutely no problem. Thanks, everybody, for the time. I hope everybody's staying healthy and sane during all this.
Yep, we are. Thank you for the words. Hope you're doing well,
right.
Too.
See you, all right, Robert. Thanks, guys.
232 Price Street.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The nature of this request, the petitioner is requesting approval of a variance from the maximum building coverage requirement of 75% to allow 100% building coverage pursuant to the remodel of an existing building. And it's important to note that that existing lot coverage as it exists today is 100% as well. The subject property is located at 232 Price Street within the downtown residential zoning district, and it is a 0.02 acre pre-existing non-conforming lot with 100% coverage. In the aerial map you see here, the light blue square that's highlighted is the location of the property. And to further elaborate on that and show how it exists currently, there up on your screen you can see a multitude of pictures showing the size and scope of the currently existing building and also the size of the lot. It's important to note the petitioner has received approval and a certificate of appropriateness by the City of Savannah Downtown Historic District Board of Review for alterations and a two-story addition to the existing building. This approval also includes the removal of an existing one-story addition at the rear of the property, and then approves a two-story addition on the rear half of the existing building, alterations to the window and door openings on the existing building, and a new stucco finish on the existing building. The board also made a recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals to approve this variance request before you here today. So there are some special conditions that exist on this lot, and that is that the lot is abnormally small, being 0.02 acres, and it's a pre-existing nonconformity. And also, it's important to mention that it has 100% lot coverage as it currently exists. I also want to backtrack a little bit and show the proposing addition just to kind of understand the scope of this project. It's best with the visualization here. So, you know, a lot of the dimensions in the front are kept the same. You can see that two-story renovation and addition in the back, but the lot coverage remains the same at 100%. It's important the staff notes that the special conditions and circumstances of that 100% lot coverage are pre-existing, not conforming lot size. They're not the result of the actions of the petitioner as they currently exist today. It's also worth mentioning that literal interpretation of the provisions of the regulations of the ordinance would deprive the petitioner of rights commonly enjoyed by other properties in the same zoning district. This would result in an undue hardship to the petitioner as is a pre-existing condition and nonconformity. The variance, if granted, is the minimum variance necessary to make reasonable use of this land, buildings, and structures, noting the small size of the parcel. And therefore, the staff recommendation is that the requested variance of 100% lot coverage is in keeping with the surrounding patterns of development and is a pre-existing condition at the site. Due to the petitioner's request to enhance the existing building and add a second story, a variance is needed as it is enlarging a nonconformity. Due to the special conditions and the comments of staff previously stated, staff recommends approval of the variance from the standard as requested. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for staff? All right. Hearing none, is there anyone here to speak for or against this petition? If you are, raise your hand electronically. Oh, yeah, the petitioner is present. I'm sorry. Would you like to say anything?
No, just wanted to just thank the staff for their help in this whole process, and obviously here to answer any questions if any arise.
Okay, well, staff's recommendation is in your favor. So anybody wishing to speak for or against this petition? All right, hearing none, I'm gonna declare, let me ask you this, does the board have any questions for the petitioner or staff? Hearing none, I'm gonna declare this public hearing closed and entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we approve the variance for 232 Price Street as described.
So accept staff's recommendation?
Accept staff recommendation, yes, all sir. Right.
Can I get a second? Seconded by Mr. Brown? I'm sorry. Seconded by Mr. Brown?
I was also seconding.
Well, we'll go with Mr. Brown, but I'll let you vote first, Hunter.
That's not what I meant. I was just saying what I was explaining to you what I was saying. I vote in favor of the motion.
All right. He's in favor. All right, Mr. Brown. Mr. Condon.
Yes.
Mr. Griffin.
Yes.
And I'm a yes, so that's unanimous. Congratulations. All right, we don't have any other business, do we? All right, hearing none, I'm going to seek a motion for adjournment. All right, can I get a second?
Second,
Mr. Condon. Okay, this meeting's adjourned.